morning. This is your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 here in Portland, Oregon. I'm Chris Andre. It's 7:50 a.m. on Memorial Day 2006. I think we've got a great deal to remember, and an overwhelming obstacle of national amnesia that we are struggling against in order to make sure people do, in fact, remember what war actually is and what it is that we've been told that we're supposedly fighting for. That's very important. Probably won't be having too many picnics today, so might as well think a little bit about that. I've got a couple of things first. We are going to have a wonderful guest. We're going to have Adrian Davis from Free Geek joining us this morning to talk a little bit about open source software, what it is, and what its potential to change society is shaping up to be. It's a very, very important, very interesting topic, and at the same time, it's a lot of fun. Open source software, I think, is a truly revolutionary concept. I am very happy to be here in Portland, Oregon, where we really are more or less ground zero. I'll let Adrian tell you more about Free Geek, but in case anybody out there doesn't know, Portland, Oregon really is the capital of the global software revolution. Linux is this software code that was developed by Linus Torvald, who lives now in Portland. He works full-time overseeing the development of Linux, which he created back in 1991 while he was in Helsinki. He's a very interesting man, and possibly we'll have him. I don't know. He's a bit media shy, and so it's I don't know if we can actually get him on the air, but that would be another interesting way to approach the subject. Free Geek, though, is right here. It's over in Southeast. There's a great deal of services that the organization performs. It's not just for Portland anymore either, I'd like to point out. They've been recycling computer equipment and empowering future geeks of Portland for over 5 years. But now, according to their website, Free Geek is sprouting up all over the country, and they suggest that maybe soon the world. I think that's a great idea. We had a story on the news this morning about Amnesty International celebrating their 45th anniversary by promoting the idea of human rights, civil rights, and freedoms on the Internet, just at a time when we are increasingly under fire, all our civil liberties, all our opportunities to speak out, to speak our minds, are under assault. I would like to draw your attention, listeners, to an article. It's the editorial in Harper's Magazine for this month. This is the new editor of Harper's. We no longer have Lewis Latham to kick around. We love Lewis Latham. And I myself had some concerns of what this magazine that I love so much was going to look like in a post-Latham world. So I approached it with, you know, some trepidation. But I am thrilled with what I read. I highly recommend it. You can find it on the Internet. The new editor, Ben Metcalf, has an editorial in here. I'm not going to possibly get myself arrested or spoil the joy of reading this for you right now, but I do recommend, I highly, highly recommend and urge listeners to go and find Ben Metcalf's editorial in the June number of Harper's. Have a look at it. It's terrific. There are a couple of other things also in Harper's that relate tangentially to the topic that my guest is going to cover today. There was a bit of a scandal about articles that the U.S. military wrote and had they paid editors of Iraqi newspapers to publish those in various newspapers in and around Iraq, mainly, I believe, in Baghdad. The articles were written last October and November by U.S. troops for placement in the Iraqi media with help from the Lincoln Group, which is a consulting firm working for the United States in Iraq. What happened was editors of these newspapers were paid up to $2,000 each for printing the stories. The Independent, the UK publication, The Independent, obtained the articles in March, and some of them pretty interesting. Here's one. The headline is Iraqi Army Defeats Terrorism. With the people's approval of the Constitution, Iraq is well on its way to forming a permanent government. Meanwhile, the underhanded forces of al-Qaeda remain bent on halting progress and inciting civil war. The honest citizens of Iraq, however, need not fear these criminals and terrorists. The brave warriors of the Iraqi security forces are hard at work stopping al-Qaeda's attacks before they occur. On October 24th, soldiers near Tashi received a report that terrorists were stockpiling dangerous weapons. The soldiers found over 150 tank and artillery rounds. They destroyed every last round, ensuring they will never be used against the Iraqi people. I'm struck by the discrepancy between this bogus article and the profound lack of concern that the U.S. military has shown for Iraqi citizens, as evidenced by one of the stories that we had this morning on the news, the incident in Haditha, where 24 people were killed, many of them women and children. They were killed execution style. Representative John Murtha has been a vocal advocate for a full investigation into the incident. There are many troubling aspects of it, and it's definitely not an isolated incident by any means. All we have to do is, on this Memorial Day, remember what happened in Fallujah. So I think that it is of great benefit, actually, on Memorial Day, to remember some of these things, to remember the people in Guantanamo Bay who have been slated for release. They're not being released because the U.S. government says that there is concern over reprisals against them if they're returned to their countries. And, of course, the detainees have said, well, reprisals, schmeisels, we want to go home. Whatever it is, how could it possibly be worse than being in Guantanamo Bay? It's a valid point, I think, that these people are making. We are coming up now. We're getting pretty close to the top of the hour. At 8 o'clock, we'll be hearing from Adrian Davis of Free Geek, and he'll tell us a little bit about that organization, how it formed, what it does, and what its future looks like. And we'll be also taking calls from listeners. So out there, if you have any questions on any, this particularly, but actually on any topic that you like, if you want to share your Memorial Day 2006 thoughts with the world, then by all means do give us a call, 503-231-8187, and share your Memorial Day memories. Wonderful. We're going to be joined in just a minute by Adrian Davis, and stay tuned. This is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, your community radio station. And I really do mean it when I tell you that you are the driving force behind this radio station. This is your station. You make it. Your support is what makes it all happen. And we embrace all our volunteers, all our community, everybody who supports this tremendous effort. I like the idea of KABU and Free Geek having a sort of a common goal, common dreams even. We are open source radio in many respects, except for one, and that is that to a great extent KABU is not based on open source software. We don't, that's not the type of computer system that we actually have, and we might want to explore some of the reasons for that. So let's welcome, it is now 8 a.m. on Monday, May 29th, Memorial Day 2006, and we have Adrian Davis from Free Geek on the line. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm waking up.
Yes, aren't we all? Yes, it seems like we're constantly, every minute of every day, waking up to something else coming down
the pike. Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being available to KABU listeners this Memorial Day. It's a holiday. We don't know why on earth people are up listening, but I'm sure that a lot of people are. I think that this is a very, very important. I'm very excited myself about open source software. Ever since I heard about it, I thought, wow, this is really a revolution in information and the way that information is handled. So I'd like it very much if you could tell us a little bit about Free Geek and how you got started.
Okay. Now, I have only been with Free Geek for a couple of years as a volunteer. Free Geek is about a six-year-old organization. It was started by a gentleman named Oso Martin here in Portland, and it started out as a computer recycling center. And the model is this. There's a lot of people replace their computers, particularly companies, folks who are, you know, work in technology. They replace their computers every 2-3 years. Mostly that stuff gets shipped offshore, and we're just externalizing the waste. But those machines are still good. The hard drives still work. The processors still work. The monitors still work. There's no good reason why that stuff can't be refurbished and redistributed out to the community. So Free Geek takes the hardware in. We have volunteers who come in and they take the machines apart, they put them back together, they learn how to build a computer from the ground up, they test all the components, and through that process they end up earning a computer. You volunteer for 24 hours at Free Geek and you get to take home a computer.
So that would be when someone comes in and they learn that and they learn these skills, the computer they're taking home is going to be running open source software. Is that right?
That is correct. The machines, all we distributed machines running a version of Linux called Debian Linux.
Say that again, please. Excuse me. Could you say that again a bit slower?
It's called Debian. Well, we run a version. There are different flavors of Linux.
Oh, good. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay. It's called Linux. Let me start with a little history about where Linux came
from. Sure,
we
have plenty of time. So, okay. You know, I'm excited about listeners hearing more about this. We talk a lot. We frequently hear phrases like open source software, and I hear people toss the phrase around frequently. But a lot of times we don't really know what that is. So anything that you can share with us about that, I think that is very useful and instructive, and especially because the more one knows about it, the more truly revolutionary it seems.
Okay. Well, what open source is a fundamentally different way of creating software. Right now, what the industry does, and I work in the software industry, largely companies like Microsoft will create software, and the source refers to before your software is actually something you can run on your computer, it has to be written in some kind of human-readable format, and that's the actual source. Microsoft has not released their source to the general public. The open source model says, we have nothing to hide. If you are somebody who wants to be a programmer, the best way of learning how to program is to watch what other programmers do. That means looking at their source code. There's an openness in, as I said, we have nothing to hide. If there are flaws in in a program, we want to know that those flaws are there. We don't want to hide those from the public and pretend like everything's hunky-dory. We want to point it out. Hey, this doesn't work.
So you would have like a more of a dialogue with people using it. So if someone finds something, they can contact the open source, the code, the people who write the code, say, look, it's buggy in this particular respect. Just want you to know about it.
Absolutely.
What's the difference between, so what does Microsoft do? Give us a little compare and contrast.
Well, Microsoft, what will happen is something, there are lots of things that are broken. Any version of Windows is at its heart fundamentally broken in several places. You call up their tech support, they will record your call. If it's something that they have a patch for, some kind of little quick fix, they'll fix it for you on the phone. But the larger issue, it goes into a black hole. And then 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, Microsoft releases another version of Windows that fixes all the things that they've gotten complaints about over the last 4 or 5 years. With the open source model, you can get fixes within a week, sometimes within a few days. You can, just about every open source developer puts their email address in the program. Just, you know, if you like this program, please contact me. If you don't like this program, if there's something broken, please contact me. Here's my email address. There's an open dialogue between the people who create the software and the people who actually use the software. And it's a much more community-oriented model. So even if you're not a software developer, even if you're not a technical writer, even if you're not a geek at any kind, you can still participate in that movement of saying, hey, I really like this email program, but you know what? It doesn't do this. Why doesn't it do this?
So it's really like a community radio. It's like community radio. It's very similar to KBOO in that respect. People call up all the time and tell us what they don't like about the radio. Then we attempt to fix it or not, as the case may be. But continue, please.
It's a much more human-centered model as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, I was wondering also, I know that, or I had heard, that when someone, if you buy a computer that has all the Microsoft business already on it, that it provides the company, Microsoft, with a lot of information about the person, the purchaser, the individual using that computer. And so I'd heard that there were privacy considerations. I'm very interested about internet privacy. I was friends with people who developed PGP, the Pretty Good Privacy. And
which I've been using for years.
It's wonderful, and it does work, doesn't it, still?
Yes, it does.
Tell us about Linux and privacy and Microsoft. Talk a bit about that, if you would.
Well, there's a couple of different things. There are things we do very differently in the Linux field, and one of which is at no point do we demand you send information about yourself to whatever company or organization develops a particular version of Linux. There are probably a dozen different organizations that are doing this. 5 or 6 of them are pretty major. None of them demand that you send information to them. Microsoft, when you buy a version of Windows, one, you have to register it with them. As part of that registration, they want your information. They want information. They also reserve the right to upload information about what's on your computer, what software is installed.
Say that again. I want listeners to be very, very clear about that. That, I believe, is it's a serious breach of privacy, and I think it's something that a lot of people don't actually understand fully, that when you buy a computer running Windows, that's basically the terms of the deal. That's what you're signing on for. So tell us that again, please.
No problem. So when you buy a version of Windows, you go out to someplace, you buy your PC, you get it home, you plug it in, and you're going through the registration process. You're uploading personal information to Microsoft. They are also uploading information about your computer. Now, they say that this is for support purposes, so that when you call in, you can simply put in your registration number and they can know, oh, okay, you have this kind of computer running this software. That is none of Microsoft's business, what my computer is. It's none of their business what is on my hard drive. But Microsoft reserves the right to have that information. That is a massive breach breach of privacy. They don't say what they're doing with that information, and they don't really go into details as to how much information they're gathering or when they actually do this. If you are permanently connected to the Internet, there's automatic updates. Those, at some point, they could be uploading further information on you as you do those automatic updates. Having been a member of the Electronic Freedom Foundation for years, this is the kind of thing that makes me scream. Within the Linux community, we respect people's privacy. I go out, I install Linux. If I choose to voluntarily participate in a survey saying, I'm running this kind of Linux on this machine, or I want to register with, you know, SUSE, which is a Novell company, or Red Hat, which is a big mm-hmm. Linux, one of the big Linux companies, then I can choose to do so, but I'm not forced to do so. At no point is my machine sending information that I haven't consented to send.
So there have been news stories about China and Google and Yahoo and other companies, I believe, have voluntarily participated in internet censorship. And is China, do people in China use various, like, you know, open source software like Linux? Do they have anything similar? And if so, is it possible for a freer exchange of information?
I'm not certain to the degree that the Chinese have access to open source software. I would imagine because there's very rarely anything on any Linux page that would be on the censored list of words that, mm-hmm. that the Chinese government censors.
Right, the words that trigger it, right, yeah.
I could see no reason why folks in China couldn't download Linux, and because it's freely available on the Internet. You can go out to any of a number of sites, download a version of Linux, burn it onto a CD, and then distribute it to all your friends.
Hear that, China?
It would solve some of the problems that that Microsoft and Yahoo and unfortunately Google, which breaks my heart that they're doing this.
I know.
That it solves some of the problems that these companies are creating for the Chinese people, and that just not cooperating with Microsoft is an act of resistance. It really is. If Microsoft is in bed with your government, then it is a revolutionary act to not use their software. Just that simple thing of, I'm going to use something else.
Right.
I'm not going to make it easy for them. It doesn't solve all of the problems because there is this great firewall that they've built around the country. So using Linux, you still couldn't, get around being able to search for the word democracy or human rights or freedom of the press or, you know, starting a community-based organization. You still wouldn't be able to do those things in China because that is not happening at the user's computer. That's happening on the Internet itself.
So we've got some callers on the line, and if that's all right with you, I'd like to take some calls.
Okay.
I'd like to hit some of the other high points along the way on the Free Geek website. You've got an artistic side,
mm-hmm.
I understand. Yes.
Yes.
And
we do.
People could come tour the facility, and if you do have, please, listeners, if you have old computer equipment that you're getting rid of, please don't put it in a dumpster. There are, for a very, very minor fee, you can have recycle it. It'll do a great deal of good for other people who have computing needs, and also you're doing the right thing environmentally by properly recycling old computer equipment. I think that's a wonderful service that Free Geek does perform. You could take it to some huge recycling place and pay a fee and all that, but it wouldn't be benefiting other people who don't have access to computers. So just do the right thing. Bring your old equipment to Free Geek. You can earn a refurbished computer. All you have to do is put in your 24 hours of service and Plus, there's no price that you can possibly put on what you're going to learn just from the experience. So I think we have a caller right now. Let me just mention that this is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm Chris Andre, and we're talking this morning with Adrian Davis of Free Geek. So we do have a caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, did you have a question for Adrian?
Well, yes. The open source versus the commercial products, I have computers that have open source. OpenOffice is one of the best ones that I use, and it's free. I make copies, and they say to distribute to everybody you can. And it works almost exactly the same as Microsoft Office. But the source code business, you know, when you sign up for the Microsoft and they want you to be able to download and upload what's on your computer, that some of that's beneficial to you, some of it's to help them protect, because there's so much pirating going on. And that may be the only way they can find illegal copies of things.
So, Adrian, did you want to respond to that?
Well, okay, and I can understand the need to protect your intellectual property. There are, I think, better ways of doing that that do not necessarily violate people's privacy. Unique key tied to the CD, that would work. That would solve the problem. You have to have it. You have to buy a physical copy. Physical copy adheres to the machine. Any of a number of ways you could do that. You don't have to violate people's privacy, and that's the fundamental problem I have with their model of protecting their intellectual property. Is,
well,
they want information that
people don't have anything to hide. They don't have to worry about it, because don't forget, there's a lot of people out there who make it their objective just to get into people's computers just for the fun of it. You have no privacy. These people do it. That's all they do all night long, is try to break in. Oh, let's see if we get into Joe's. Let's see if we get into Mary's. Let's see if we get into the Pentagon. That's all they do, is find ways to break into computers. You don't have any privacy when you go online.
You can protect your privacy.
Well, I keep updating my spyware constantly because it's always changing.
PGP is free. You can just download it.
Yeah, but you have to keep updating all the time. Because like I say, there's people out there, and my youngest boy was one of them at one time, that it's a game to them. What can we get into now? You have no
privacy. I've been a Unix system administrator for about 15 years now. I understand, you know, that there's somebody always it is sort of a Red Queen arms race. You're always trying to stay one step ahead of people who are trying to break into your machine. That does not necessarily give companies the right to violate your privacy further. It's difficult enough. And then the other thing is, if Microsoft would do some fairly simple things, they could secure the computers a great deal more. There is Linux machines are much more secure than Windows machines. Out of the box, they're much more secure.
I think that's only because they're not targeting them. I have a lot of MP3s in my computer.
Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? If they're not targeting them, there you go. That's sort of built in for a firewall, huh? A psychological firewall.
But I've lost systems, I've lost hard drives because of people targeting my computer because I have MP3s on there. Once I get to a certain level of my own CDs that I put on there, they go. And
I've had a firewall
destroyed. Oh, yeah, they you don't think the record recording industry has pretty smart guys out there finding out how to get a firewall?
Wait. Adrian, answer that first question, and then please, caller, if you could restate your follow-up so that listeners can hear, please.
Okay.
Are you using a firewall? And if you're using a firewall,
is every
single port blocked down? Everything that absolutely does not need to be open. No ports, no getting in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Caller?
Yes.
Is that something that you could, that a person conceivably could do? I mean, one has to go to the more valuable the material on a computer, the more insistent the attacks and the raids are going to be. But by the same token, I think that it is more important to keep your files and so forth protected. So to go to a bit more trouble, and as Adrian said, keeping every single port on that firewall locked down, then if that takes, that's a bit more trouble, then it's surely worth it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But, you know, I get the feeling, and I wish I could ever prove this, that the recording industry hires people to go out and search these things out and destroy them. It almost seems like that.
The recording industry?
Oh, yeah. Because they don't want you downloading songs and uploading songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know where you've got it when it's on your computer. And I'm sure, I'm convinced that they go into your computer, see what's there, and if you have more than so many of them, you're in trouble.
That's an interesting thought, caller. Thank you so much. We've got a couple other callers, and if you don't mind, I'd like to go take another call. Thanks for calling, though. Yes, caller, you are on the air.
Thank you so much. We've got a couple other callers, and if you don't mind, I'd like to go take...
Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. On a down-to-earth sort of level, recycling computers, I suppose you wouldn't be... The Housing Authority has buildings, and their residents... the ones who have them get rid of their computers. I know it's a government system. Are you interested in being involved with that?
Could you repeat the question? I couldn't quite hear you.
Should I say it again? Or
yes, caller, please.
Recycling computers. The Housing Authority is a government system, of course, and it has buildings where some of the residents get rid of their computers. Are you interested in getting involved in that, or is that too complicated? Recycling them. Anyway, I'll get off the air. And
would those computers belong to the government or to
the residents? Residents getting, you know, putting them out, and I don't know what the Housing Authority does with them.
Well, it would be the responsibility of the resident to recycle their equipment.
Well, they put them out in the garbage area, and apparently the Housing Authority takes them away. Anyway,
have the person who is managing the site contact FreeGeek, and give me just a second, and I will get the number. Well, actually, the website is www.freegeek.org, and you could contact the organization and see what kind of arrangements could be made to either... The big issue would be transport of the machines themselves. That's probably something we could that could be easily solved.
Yeah, because it is a volunteer organization, so there are people that naturally would want to be involved in making that sort of thing happen, right?
Absolutely.
And you are located at the Community Technology Center, 1731 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. We'll get a phone number in just a moment. I don't have one on these pages, but we do have one on somebody's pages. anyway, do we have another caller? We have no other callers right now, so we can go on and talk about how one, since the last caller brought up a good point, suppose I'd like to have a computer and I can't afford one. How would I work with FreeGeek to obtain a computer?
Okay. The site itself is open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 to 7. You can show up any time during that period. We do tours a couple of times a day. Take the tour and then just tell one of the people at the front desk you're interested in the build program or the adoption program. The adoption program is where you get to adopt a computer after working in basically the warehouse for 24 hours. The build program, you build 5 computers, and the 6th one you build for yourself, and they teach you how to build a computer. And basically, once you've fulfilled your volunteer commitment, you get to take your computer home. At that point, the day you're going to take your computer home is when you start to interact with me, because I teach a class on Linux, because it is different. Even if you've been using Windows, and probably about half of my students have used Windows, and the other half have never used a computer before, have very limited exposure to computers. So there's a bit of a learning curve. And so I spend 3 hours with them on a Saturday afternoon teaching them, you know, this is what Linux is, this is how you you start up things. This is how you do some basic troubleshooting. Give them a little bit of information about the open source philosophy, and just sort of a guided tour around the computer they're about to take home. And we're trying to, I'm trying to expand that program because 3 hours is not a lot of time.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow, that definitely, that's a sharp learning curve.
It is. I mean, it's a big brain dump. But there's also one of the other wonderful things about the open source community is it's a very gift-oriented culture. If you throw a question out into the community on the internet, and there's different Yahoo groups, there's Usenet, there are all different kinds of information resources, people's blogs. If you throw a question out onto the internet, I guarantee you, you will get at least two or three answers. People will say, "Oh yeah, I had this problem. Here's what I did to solve it." Or, "Well, you've told me part of what I need to help you solve your problem. I need this information. Run this command. Email me the results back, and I will help you solve your problem." And it's just people who are passionate about it, who want to see people empowered to use this technology, who enjoy talking about it.
You just don't see people that excited about Microsoft, in my experience.
because there's not a lot to get excited about. this is largely done by a lot of enthusiasts, a lot of people who work in the Linux community, work in the open source software development community, also volunteer our time on the weekends, volunteer our time in the evening. I work for a large for-profit software company, Monday through Friday. This is my way of healing my soul from 40 hours a week in corporate America.
That's very interesting, and I think that too is a part of the really revolutionary aspect of this. I think that in a world where you have just one piece of bad news after another, this is really a wonderful and exciting thing. Let's take a hypothetical situation, though. Suppose
okay.
I have a Mac iBook and a little laptop, and I want to convert and go start, I want to run open source software, if I want to run Linux, and I bring my computer in. What happens? Take us through it.
Okay. First of all, as of OS 10, underneath the Mac operating, underneath that Mac, that beautiful Mac GUI, is FreeBSD. It's an open source. It actually is an open source operating system.
Say the name of the underlying.
It's FreeBSD. That's mm-hmm. Berkeley Standard Distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And as of Mac, it was Mac OS 10 mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. they adopted this. So they are using open source now. However, if you wanted to run just a straight out Linux version, you can do that. The two that I know for certain that work, there's a Linux called Ubuntu.
Say that again for our listeners, please.
It's called Ubuntu, and it's spelled U, B as in Bravo, U, N, T as in Tom, U.
Mm-hmm.
And the latest version of Ubuntu I know works with a Mac. They have a disk. Pop the disk in and install it. All the right things will happen. The other one is OpenSUSE,
mm-hmm.
and SUSE is spelled S as in Sam, U, S as in Sam, E as in Edward. And again, that has a native, run it on your Mac, pop the CD in, all the right things will happen. Software loads.
So it's I know a great many people feel overwhelmed or intimidated by the very concept of Linux, and the people that I've spoken with feel that it's just way too much. that having learned to run their work with a PC or work with a Mac, there's plenty of problems with that, and that the very concept of Linux is just absolutely overwhelming to them. But it's really very easy, isn't it?
It has gotten much easier. The open source community is really starting to pay attention to ordinary folks who, end users, what we call them in the industry, mm-hmm. who want to use Linux for whatever reason. Either they're tired of paying Microsoft fees, they want to protect their privacy, students or people on a fixed income who can't afford, you know, the latest, greatest hardware, but they want a computer, they want to email, they want to browse the web, do word processing. You can do that with Linux. 7 or 8 years ago, when I was first started working with Linux, it was very difficult, and it was not something I would recommend to people who were not geeks. At this point, several of the different flavors of Linux, Ubuntu, SUSE definitely, have gotten it that ordinary people want to use this. They don't want to be hackers. They're not programmers. They're not system administrators. They're social workers. They're teachers. They're librarians. They're students who want to use a computer, and they've made it very easy. It is largely GUI-based. The installations are largely GUI-based now. You point, you click.
For the benefit of listeners who aren't familiar with computer talk, GUI-based, could you just define that?
Sorry.
We used to use
these terms, but I forget.
No, really, I'm not kidding you. It is. I mean, a lot of people have other things that they have expertise in. Mm-hmm. And they use computers mainly just as end users. So define it, if you wouldn't mind, please.
So a GUI stands for Graphical User mm-hmm. Interface. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at a Mac or you're looking at Windows, that's a GUI. You're moving your mouse, you're pointing on icons, you're pointing on words, and the right things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be that you had to actually know what you were doing in order to install Linux. Now you really don't need to know what you're doing. You just
pop a disk in the
mm-hmm. DVD or the CD-ROM drive, turn your computer on, and you get this nice little graphical interface that will walk you through the installation, walk you through the setup, explain to you, here's the choice you have. Do you want to use A or B? What software do you want to install, or do you want me to just pick, you know, here's a common set of software, I'll install that for you, and then if you want to install more software, here's how you go about doing that. And it's one of the things, the big Achilles heel of the open source community, I think part of why Linux hasn't been adopted more widespread, is because up until about 2 or 3 years ago, we weren't making it easy on people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're increasingly starting to do that, and that's one of my big tasks within the open source community, is reminding all of us who've been geeks from the time we could breathe that not everybody's a geek. And we need to, and if we're not doing this for our grandmothers, then we're doing something wrong.
In my classes, my
prototypical user are my parents. They were college professors born in the 1920s. Computers were never going to be intuitive for them. And what my ideal Linux is, something that I could hand to my mom and say, here's a way for you to communicate with me, communicate with your grandson, communicate with your daughters, and have her install it and go. And she doesn't need to understand necessarily everything that's going on underneath the hood. And if she has a question, she can call, or there's a resource.
And it's my experiences with it. It's much easier to get in touch with someone involved with open source software than to say trying to call Microsoft, or even for that matter, Mac. You know, if you call the Apple places, sometimes it can be, or you go online, and very frequently the problem is you can't go online, and that's what you're trying to contact them about. About your classes that you do, this is a different world. I think that this does kind of blast away at some of the shibboleths and myths surrounding open source software, that it is difficult to use, that it is geeky, and that you have to really, you know, got to speak the language or you can't get anywhere with it. It is amazingly easier now than before, and it is a very elegant system. Tell us about, suppose someone takes your three-hour class as they're getting ready to take the computer home. So they could, for example, repeat the class, or you said something about expanding that so that people could do like follow-up sort of things.
Both. They can repeat the class. Normally we have seats for four, but I am
four.
Perfectly
comfortable. Four people. That's wonderful.
Typically, we have seats for four people. I am perfectly happy to have five or six or seven people. We can double up if that's necessary. You can take the class as many times as you'd like to. I'm also in the process of creating online coursework that is a way of following up, because I can really only teach probably two or three classes a week. And so a way of, and since I recognize there's a lot of information that gets crammed into 3 hours. So I'm putting lessons out on the Free Geek site, and there'll be links to that as that progresses, that people can go out and they're like, oh, she said something about this. They can go out, they can look for that term, look for that command, what have you, and get a quick tutorial that they can walk themselves through, because I'm a very big believer in people being empowered to teach themselves the skills they need to know. And then they can go and teach other people. I'm entirely self-taught in computers. What I have learned, I taught myself or was forced to learn on the job. But I've only ever taken three or four computer classes in my life.
See, see, listeners, you can do it. You can do it. Do we have a caller? I believe we do. Richard, thank you very much. Yes, good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. A simple concern. To get information, sometimes it works best for some of us in person. Are there any other sites where people can get advice on the software, open source software, except coming down to Free Geek?
Yes, there are a number of really good sites. One of the places I would start here. Are you familiar with Wikipedia?
No.
Okay. The URL is www.wikipedia.org, and Wikipedia is W-I-K as in kite, I, P as in Paul, mm-hmm. E, D as in dog, I-A, .org,
mm-hmm.
And it's an online open source encyclopedia. If you search for the term Linux there, or if you Google Linux, you'll pull up like linux.org. Linux.org is one of the best beginner sites because it will explain, this is what Linux is, here are the different distributions, here's where you get them, here's places you can go online to find out more information, here are the groups, you know, Google groups or Yahoo groups that you can go and talk to people and find out, you know, get technical support, what have you.
Mm-hmm. The other question... are there any cafes that basically work on Linux? Or?
I know of one bar. I don't know of any cafes, but I know of a bar. It's called the Mock Crest Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And they have laptops that you can go and use. The use of the laptop is free. You know, you go in and buy yourself a Coke or what have you, and you can use the you can sit in the bar and use their laptops, and they're out on Lombard. Oh,
so North Lombard, if you're going towards St. John's, isn't it?
Okay. Well, thanks.
And
it's a
great little place, and like they use Linux. It's run by a couple of Linux geeks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you, caller. Do we have any other callers? Okay, that allows me to to ask other questions. I see on the website that there is an artsy side of geekdom. Talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, you know, one of the interesting misconceptions that people have about geeks is that we're all just sort of very stuck in our heads, and that there isn't a creative side to this. I can't speak to Microsoft, but I know that most of the people that are involved in computing that I've worked with in the last 15 years, either we write or we do music or we do some kind of visual art, painting, sculpting, what have you. There is there's a very tight marriage between the kinds of thinking that you do to solve computer problems and art. It's much more, computer science is very misnamed. It's really computer art. It's closer to an art. You're much more using your creative side. The art project I'm not heavily involved with, but I know that we've started putting up various forms of art. Some of it is computer art, and by that I don't mean stuff done on a computer. I mean taking old hardware that just is never going to work anymore. You know, some old motherboard, a piece of memory, a piece of hard drive, a piece of a monitor, something, and creating art out of it.
Some of this stuff is really beautiful. I mean,
and it's wonderful stuff. It's absolutely wonderful, wonderful stuff. Because you see this, what otherwise could be a very cold technology, made into something human. And as long as we've been doing, as long as humans have been doing art, and we've been doing art as long as we've been human, we've always just taken what's at hand. You know, whatever our hands could touch, whatever our eyes fell upon, and said, oh, you know, if we combine this in a different way, we get something different, something larger than the sum of its parts. And so I'm not sure, I think those nights happen, they're either Monday or Tuesday nights. And it's on the website.
And I think that this Friday, the first part of the first Friday art thing, there's going to be a bit of a show there, right? Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's exciting. 7 p.m., and that would be at the Free Geek Community Technology Center at 1731 Southeast 10th Avenue. That's in Southeast Portland. So this Friday, you can come down to Free Geek and have a look at geek art. Interesting. Let's take another call. Yes,
okay.
Caller, you're on the air.
This is a Memorial Day call.
Yes.
My mom just died, and she was a war veteran of World War II, and I would like to... can you hear me?
Yes, yes. You might want to speak up a wee bit.
Okay.
And don't forget we have the 8-second delay on
okay.
This now.
Yeah, it's real confusing. I wrote her a memorial. She just died last month. She joined the Women's Air Force Service Pilot Program,
mm-hmm.
called WASP,
mm-hmm.
and it's an extension of the Army Air Corps in World War II. And as an engineering test pilot, she tested the planes before the men were permitted to fly them, and she sometimes towed targets for live ammunition practice, and she'd return with bullet holes in her plane canopy. And she ferried planes from factories to air bases for 2 years until the end of World War II. And General Arnold said of these women, he said, there isn't a plane we make, these women can't fly. And she just died.
That's a remarkable story, caller, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us today. That's Memorial Day. Call. We do have another caller on the line also. Good morning. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're great. Thanks.
Good. I just wanted to remind KBOO listeners that we at KBOO also use open source software on our website. I'm one of the website volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And we use what's called an open source content management system for our website.
Well, it's a perfect matchup. Because this is open source software, the whole philosophy seems absolutely appropriate and in line with the philosophy at KBOO. It's part of our mission is the community. We do a lot of training, a lot of work with volunteers, and it's the same world outlook, it seems to me.
Well, you know, as you pointed out, I mean, open source is more than just a way to develop software. It's also sort of an idea. And that KBOO is sort of, as you put it, open source news. And that's something I'm a huge proponent of. I have a community news organization called Open Media Center. And the whole idea that we need to empower ourselves by taking the way we inform ourselves back is a very powerful one. And I think KBOO is central to that. And perhaps you can talk about why we at KBOO don't use open source software on our computers down there. And I'm going to take my responses off the air.
Did you have a question for Adrian, though? Adrian, you're still with us, though, yeah?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good, good.
I'm still here.
Good. Well, I haven't got an answer to that. I think it'd be a great idea. And I believe, though, that because of the nature of KABU, where we have a great many people coming through, a lot of learners, people who aren't familiar with computers at all, and are somewhat, it can be an intimidating environment. And I think that the idea is that people are frightened of Linux and of open source software. And that's what the purpose, I think, of this program is. And I think that Adrian, you've done a fabulous job, actually, of reassuring people that this is not what, you know, you're not going to be sitting there for 28 hours eating Skittles and writing code. You know, number one reason, of course, I think, is why would you want to pay Microsoft fees? Bill Gates, believe me, doesn't need any of your money. He's got plenty of his own, so why do you want to pay Microsoft fees?
Absolutely.
Second of all is privacy. Why would you want the government to have any more information about you? They already know everything about you. They know, the government knows more about you than your mother knows. So privacy is definitely an issue. But I think even more fundamentally, it's a question of philosophy. You know, this is community-based. There's a wonderful network of people. Everybody I've met that has anything to do with open source software have been really smart, really funny, really interesting people.
It's a wonderful group of people. It's a very open group of people. And as far as KABU, I would love to work with KABU as far as slowly starting to move over to an open source model in the offices. Showing up, I can, you know, do curriculum for you guys to help you make that transition, because I think it's a natural marriage for KABU.
There's a workshop that if any listeners out there are interested, why not give the station a call, or you can, of course, email us. You can send an email to the Morning Newsroom, to News and Public Affairs. You can email Kathleen Stevenson at amnews@kboo.org. So do that. Let us know. Feedback, communication, dialogue, that's what we're all about here. If you'd be interested in an open source software workshop, I think it's more than just using a computer. It really is a revolution in the way computers are used and who has access to technology. Very, very important question.
It's a gigantic question. I've worked with digital divide issues for about 10 years now, because having worked in Silicon Valley as that whole boom was taking off, and one of the things, it was very apparent just driving from my home in San Francisco to my office in Oakland, that there were people who were being cut out of this, both job-wise and on a larger sense, didn't have access. Drive through Eastern Oakland, drive through North Portland.
Or
East Palo Alto, which is probably the most stark example of it in the Bay Area, certainly. And you see a lot of people who, this is passing them by. And this has become literacy. I mean, computer literacy has become like book literacy. Not having it puts you seriously behind an eight ball.
Yeah, you're definitely there is a marginalized population that does not have access or believes. I mean, I think that whether people actually have access or whether they know that they have access to technology, that's an interesting question too, because I think that there is a great deal more available to people such as this, such as Free Geek, that were the general public more aware, then they would take greater advantage of these resources, such as Free Geek, which we'd very much like to see. Getting the word out to people is a very important aspect of the whole revolution in technology and computing right now, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, people need to know. I taught at a organization before I moved up here that was working on these issues, working with the at-risk youth, teaching them computer skills, enough to get jobs in the field. But part of what the more subversive thing I wanted to do was for them to go back into their home communities and say, hey, you know, there's this whole world out here that we're not part of, and we're going to create our own organizations in our neighborhoods so that we are part of this, so we aren't cut out of this yet again. This is not, you know, it's not another organization, not another situation where once the jobs aren't there, once this is old hat and everybody's moved on to something else, then poor communities, communities of color, communities of various marginalized people, immigrant communities, then we get involved in this.
It's like take back the circuits campaign, sort of. I think it's wonderful, and it is truly subversive. It really, in many, many ways, socially, it's a very subversive thing to be involved with. And let's hear it for subversion, is my philosophy. I have one other question,
okay.
Just generally about the Free Geek. You have a thrift store there where people can buy all kinds of computing equipment that they might not, you know, it's a very expensive deal walking into a computer store. So what's your thrift store at Free Geek like?
You can buy pretty much anything you could go down to, say, Fry's Electronics or CompUSA and buy. If you need a new monitor, you can buy, it's going to be an older monitor. It's not going to be a flat screen. I haven't seen any flat screens in the thrift store, but you can buy an older 17-inch monitor, which you go to Fry's Electronics, you're not walking out without having spent at least $150, $200 at absolute minimum. Go to the Free Geek store, you can get one for $50, maybe $60, $65. There are complete systems that are in the store that you can buy for under $100. They're going to be running Linux. They're going to be a couple of years old. But a couple of years old on a Linux system is like just about like a brand new computer running Windows, because Linux is a much smaller operating system. It doesn't require as much hardware. If you need a mouse, you can pick up a mouse for a couple of dollars as opposed to spending, you know, $5 or $10. It's a great way of also supporting the organization. That's one of the ways we get our proceeds.
It's a 100% positive feedback system, isn't it? Because, you know, you get a good deal at the Free Geek thrift store, and you're also helping other people, like members of your own open source community, in a way.
Absolutely. And it's one of the beauties of Free Geek is, I mean, this hardware, computer hardware, really is built to last longer than the computer industry would like people to believe. The industry drives on almost 100% turnover every 3 to 5 years. You know, companies, individuals, and, okay, on the one hand, that's why I'm employed 40 hours a week. On the other hand, this stuff it has to go somewhere. Free Geek sort of closes that ecological loop and says, you know, there's no reason to be tossing your computer out. Even if you want to replace your machine, that's fine, but there's no reason to be tossing your computer out and throwing it in a dumpster or sending it offshore for it to be in a dumpster in some other country. Recycle it and use that hardware until it simply can't work anymore.
Right. And then it moves on to whatever it's going to be next. You can also, too, I want to just point out to listeners that donating to Free Geek is another really good thing that you can do to support your community. I don't just mean open source. I think that this relates to the greater community at large out there. We all live actually in a sea of information, and this is probably the best part of the sea to be in. And I wanted to ask, this is KBOO Radio 90.7 here in Portland, Oregon, community radio, and we're community geeks. Like, think of yourself, in fact, as, you know, recently the administration said that all women of a childbearing age should think of themselves as pre-pregnant. So why not let's think of ourselves as pre-geek? If you don't think of yourself as a geek, try thinking of yourself as a pre-geek. then easier to make sense of it all. I just wanted to thank my guest this morning, Adrian Davis of Free Geek, for sharing an absolute and a wealth of information with listeners and taking questions, introducing us to Free Geek and the possibility of maybe workshops with other volunteers at KBOO. Let's see.
It was a pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Let's give the address one more time. Let's see. You're at the Community Technology Center at 1731 Southeast 10th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. And the hours are 11 till 7, am I right?
That is correct. And that's Tuesday through Saturday.
Tuesday.
So closed Sunday and Monday.
Free Geek is closed Sunday and Monday. And the question from a caller, I believe, is do any bus routes go past?
Let's see. It's right off the 14 line, the 10 line, if you're coming from downtown or if you're coming from like outer southeast. You could also get off the 4 line coming from downtown or the 6th. You got off just off the Hawthorne Bridge, and then you walk down like a 4 or 5 block walk.
Easy, easy.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's very bike friendly. There's a lot of places to park your bike as well.
Wonderful. Well, I want to just one more time thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to add that you'd like to tell people?
I guess the only thing I would say is don't be afraid. Everything is learnable. And there are resources out there. If you are interested in doing something different with computing, you can do that. Don't be intimidated. It's really not that scary.
Good. That's good. Good message for everybody. I want to thank you so much. I'd like very much, if any listeners know people that would have been interested in this program, please be sure to keep listening, your community radio station. We will have Adrian Davis back on the air with us in the near future, and we will cover more topics having to do with open source software, Linux, and Free Geek. So I wanted to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day.
And you too.
All right.